Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. Here at the ATO, we want tax and super to be as easy to understand as possible. So we've invited industry experts to sit down with ATO's senior leaders and ask them the questions. We hope you enjoy this episode of Tax Invoice.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on part two of our Tax Invoice podcast on work-related expenses. My name is Gavin Swan, and I'm the Director of Absolute Accounting Services. I'm again joined by Assistant Commissioner Adam O'Grady from the ATO. I'm again hosting today's podcast from my office at Erina in New South Wales with Adam in the Adelaide office of the ATO. Welcome, Adam.
Thanks, Gavin. Good to be here today to talk to you about work-related expenses.
Now, Adam, Australians are a very generous crowd of people, and they've had good reason to dip into their pockets of late. We've had bushfires and floods. We're knee-deep in the middle of a coronavirus crisis at the moment. But the other catastrophic crisis this year was, of course, the devastating bushfires that swept across our country. And it seems like a lifetime ago, and it seems like those bushfires lasted a long time. But the generosity across the country was absolutely phenomenal. So, Adam, for the people who've donated, give us the rundown on what donations and what gifts are tax deductible.
Yeah, thanks, Gavin. You're right. It does seem like a lifetime ago, and I think we were all sort of amazed at the generosity of Australians. And again, probably building on a similar theme here, that it does interact with the tax system, and you can claim deductions if you follow some pretty simple rules with your gifts and donations. So a gift or a donation that you make, particularly to the bushfires or floods or really any of our charities, can apply. So whether it's money or certain forms of property, where it's made to an approved organisation, so that's a deductible gift recipient of those organisations, and that's available on our website as to who those organisations are. And it's a true donation or a gift, meaning you don't get a benefit from it. So if you're buying a raffle ticket or something like that, that's not a gift or donation if it is truly a gift for that. When you do give a donation, generally speaking, you obviously get the receipt. And if it's more than $2, you can claim the deduction. I'll often say on the receipt if it's a deductible gift recipient for you to make that claim. The other concession we do have available there is for the bucket donation. So I was in a world before Corona when you might have been in the pub and someone put a bucket around to collect $10 for the bushfire victims. If you put $10 in there, you can claim that without a receipt up to that limit. Again, the important point with the gifts and donations is you obviously claim the deduction for them in those circumstances, but you do need that written evidence, that written receipt again. And we do find people actually forget maybe how generous they are as well. I don't know if you find that with your own clients.
Absolutely. The number of clients who come into you, and again, when they produce the receipts, and for a lot of these organisations, particularly where you're giving on a monthly basis, they will send you an end-of-year receipt. So going back to my earlier comments about doing some tax planning and getting your records together, particularly places like World Vision and the Smith family will furnish you with your record of how much you've donated for the year. So it saves you rustling up your individual records. But yeah, I'm quite amazed when I see my clients who have these donations listed out. The benevolence of us as a country is quite amazing. It never ceases to amaze me, actually. And it is not necessarily confined to those of us with bare cash that give money. I often find that many people on Struggle Street are the ones who are dipping into whatever funds they may have. Adam, you hit on something before too. The biggest problem I tend to find too is the raffle tickets and the teddy bears and so on that you get in exchange. If I could just reiterate those words, where you do receive something in exchange, it is not strictly a donation. The other thing is, of course, if you look up and see if someone's a DGR, a deductible gift recipient, that will give you the good oil on whether you can claim or not. Another problem in that area that I find, Adam, is that people giving directly to an overseas charity, and that can create some problems. There's a couple of ways to search those out. As you've mentioned, on the ATO website, you can have a look at them. There's another website that I often use in relation to business. It's abr.business.gov.au, where you can look up someone via their ABN or their name, and that will give you their ABN details. And if you go down to the bottom of that page, it will also give you their deductible gift recipient status. So either the ATO website or abr.business.gov.au will be able to help you out there. And you may just feel a little bit more comfortable that you're actually giving to a deductible gift recipient instead of someone who's a little bit more of an unknown quantity, shall we say.
Exactly, Gavin. And of course, the added benefit is, in addition to giving and feeling good about helping those people out, you get a little bit back at tax time as well if you give to the right organisations.
It's always good delivering that good news, Adam. Now, a difficult question that we have to broach from time to time, Adam, is reconstructing records. Now, we often come across this as practitioners, and of course you would in the tax office as well, where someone just doesn't have the records that they may need. And it can be a difficult scenario to encounter. The ideal client, the ideal taxpayer, the ideal scenario is one where we've got those receipts magically in front of us. So I guess I'll start off by throwing to you and saying, how does the ATO approach these sort of things, these lost records or records that are partially complete, especially in light of the recent natural disasters that we've had in this country?
Yeah, look, I think it's a good question, Gavin. And certainly where people have lost records and lost their receipts, often because of these disasters, so whether they've lost their home or to a bushfire or it's been flooded and those sort of things, there is opportunities and there is options for you to reconstruct your records and try and recover those records. Again, it touches on my earlier point that the key is to do it early. Obviously, if you've lost your home, you've probably got more important things in the immediate aftermath of rebuilding your home and finding a place to live. But don't try and claim all your receipts and then wait for us to maybe come and question you. Try and do that beforehand, obviously, is probably my first piece of advice. Where you've lost your records have been damaged, destroyed, all those sort of things. What we will do as an administrator, we will look to the three golden rules. So we'll look to confirm that you did actually spend the money. So something like a bank statement or a credit card statement will actually show us that you've spent some money on it. But that alone is not enough to prove that it's a work-related expense, obviously. But we'll then look for information from you around, are you entitled to the deduction? How is it really connected to your employment and things like that? For those real big pieces of equipment, so if you've got a computer, for example, you've spent a few thousand dollars on a computer to work from home and then you've damaged that receipt. Often if you go back to the supplier, they can actually provide you with a reprint of the receipt. We'd certainly encourage people to do that. The other probably tip in this space is prevention's always a good thing, and tools like My Deductions with the ATO provides, and there is other record keeping tools out there as well where you can actually keep copies or images of your receipts, keep a record of your expenses throughout the year. It means you've got that stored copy available to you, can be uploaded to the cloud and available to you long term. So that if these sort of events happen, you've already got those records and receipts there without having to reconstruct them.
Adam, if I could also mention, a lot of these records are online or in the cloud. So, for example, bank statements are online. If you go somewhere like Harvey Norman and buy a computer, they've got your records on file there and they'll often keep a copy of the receipts for you. I guess without wanting to put words in the mouth of the tax office, you would also be looking at patterns that are there as well. In other words, if during this period of reconstruction of records, you suddenly see a pattern that's out of whack with normal, then you would certainly question that. And I would also add in, from my point of view as a practitioner, when I've had to reconstruct records, I would have to say that the ATO has been more than reasonable in their approach to it, provided that you have done everything that is possible in terms of reconstructing your records, getting bank statements, going back and having a look at, say, the last couple of years and proving that it is in line with what you have done in the past. All of those sort of things enforce your case with the tax office when you're trying to reconstruct your records. My deepest sympathies to people who, including fellow practitioners who are listening, who have to reconstruct records. It is not a pretty exercise. But by doing a couple of things that we've talked about, Adam, with the tools that are available to us these days, we can make it a little less painful than it has been previously in the past. Now, Adam, we're sort of getting to the end of our podcast here, and I guess before we finish up, we want to talk about tips before you actually lodge your tax returns this coming tax time in 2020. I know I've got a bunch of things I could talk about, but I'd like for you to start off with the tips that the ATO would give taxpayers before they lodge, not after you've lodged, not as you're lodging, but before you lodge, as you're preparing. What advice can you give our listeners to this podcast, Adam?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of really good tips, and I think they're straightforward, but they're obviously, you know, they are things that we see people miss or don't pay attention to. So the first one is double check your bank account details that we have for you. Obviously, at tax time, if you've kept all your receipts and you've done all the right things, you want to get your refund deposited into your account as quickly as possible. And we all do it. We all change banks every now and again. One of the big things we see at tax time is people sort of skipping over the bank account details we may hold for them for their refund, and goes to the wrong account, or it goes to a closed account, and it just really delays the whole process. So first tip is double check your bank details that they are the current details.
And Adam, on just on that, sorry to interrupt you there. I find also with bank accounts, sometimes the bank might change your account details for you. So for example, what you thought was a joint bank account is now an individual bank account, the bank has changed their numbers. Or if you've previously banked with a credit union that has now become a bank, often their BSB has changed. And often people are refinancing as well, which changes where their bank details go into. So we ask our clients all the time about it, and we feel like we can't ask them often enough. So, and I can't emphasize how important it is to ask for those details, because you can be on a wild goose chase looking for your refund if you don't have those details correct up front.
No, exactly, Gavin. And, you know, we want to give people their refund that they're entitled to as quickly as possible. So that one simple step obviously speeds up the whole process.
All right. So what's your next tip there, Adam?
Look, the next one is around your STP or your income statement. So for majority of people listening, they will no longer get a payment summary from your employer. It's actually delivered through the single touch payroll system. So that's available through our pre-fill service, whether it's with your agent or whether it's through the MyGov ATO Online MyTax service, but only lodge when that actually is listed as tax ready. So employers have till the end of July to finalise that income statement as tax ready. We really encourage people to wait until that period before they lodge. What that avoids is obviously having to amend or change the return after the fact if the employer's got some minor changes to those records. What it can also do is actually delay your refund or delay your return while we may need to validate what you've put in your return. So really important to wait until your STP record or your income statement is listed as tax ready.
Adam, if I could just elaborate on that as well. Sometimes people get a little bit frustrated when they look at their MyGov account and they see that their income statement, which is the new fandangled word for payment summary, they see their income statement there, they see numbers there, but there's a degree of frustration when they can't actually lodge it. And as you quite rightly say, it could be the employer has that information there, but they haven't finalised yet. There may be some last minute adjustments that they've got to make. They might have plugged in some overtime incorrectly, or allowances might be bundled up with gross, or they might have mixed up the amount of withholding that you've paid. There could be quite a number of reasons why it's not ready yet. So please just wait for that to say finalised or tax ready. You may have to wait a little bit longer for that to happen, but it beats the alternative, which is having the tax office either delay your tax return or having to amend your tax return.
No, very much, Gavin, very much.
Now, Adam, your next tip for before a taxpayer lodges their tax return.
The next tip is a little bit on a similar vein as the last one, but it is wait for pre-fill. So you talked about the online bank accounts and things like that. But our pre-fill service, we collect data from all sorts of organisations, so not only your employers, but private health and banks, and we will pre-fill that to your tax return. Again, one, that makes it nice and simple for you, so you don't have to go to lots of organisations trying to get an end-of-year tax statement for your health fund or an end-of-year statement from your bank on how much interest you've paid. We'll actually pre-fill that directly to the return for you. The benefit of doing that is, again, it reduces the time it takes you to complete your return yourself. But in addition, if you do forget something or you don't report it correctly through your tax return because you sort of have a guess at how much bank interest you've made, as I mentioned earlier, we analyse every return that's lodged with us. And where we see individuals have omitted income or got maybe their private health insurance wrong, we need to contact them, validate that or correct that return. Again, it just delays the entire process for everyone. So as much as possible, wait for that pre-fill service. For most of our listeners, all your pre-fill will be available by the end of July. So if you can hold out for that, it really does make preparing your return a lot easier and a lot more accurate.
Adam, a lot of taxpayers this year will have for the first time in their tax return some government payments, and specifically there I refer to unemployment benefits. It's important to note a couple of things. If there is anything from Services Australia, formerly known as Centrelink, that needs to go on your tax return, it will be pre-populated on your pre-fill, on your MyGov account. Don't stand by the post box waiting for the postie to deliver the payment summaries as they used to do. It will turn up there. And Services Australia, pretty quick off the mark there. I would imagine anything like that would be through by certainly by mid-July. But please just keep an eye out for that, because it will affect your income tax return. The other thing too is anything that taxpayers have received in the way of JobKeeper payments will be bundled up in their wages and salary. It'll be in their income statement from their employer anyway. They shouldn't be looking for a separate item to declare. The exception there, of course, is if you're claiming JobKeeper payments as an eligible business participant, as a sole trader in business or in a partnership. But just bear those couple of things in mind. And yes, you may well be waiting till the end of July. But again, the alternative is to be chasing around for this until tax time 2021, if you're unlucky. So just have a little bit of patience. And Adam, I would say too, once the tax return is done and ready to go, from when you push the button to when the money goes into your bank account, we're looking at if everything is in order, if the bank details are correct, and there's no reason for the ATO to pull the tax return aside, we're looking at refunds being received well within a week, aren't we?
Yeah, look, it's around a week, Gavin. It's sort of, you know, depending on exactly what day of the week you lodge, it's that 7 to 10 days. As I said, where people do get a little bit frustrated with us is when we have to stop a return processing through, which we've covered today, some of the reasons that we will do that. That's where, you know, as much as possible, I try and encourage people, if you can wait until late in July, where you've got that pre-fill information, and you've taken those steps of collating your receipts, keeping your diaries, all those sort of things, and being really clear with what you can and can't claim. If you lodge at the end of July, you'll have your refund in your bank account sort of a week later. Nice and clean, nice and simple for everyone. It's those people that try and get in on the 1st of July and make it all up a little bit or just guess. They can finish up finding themselves waiting to well into August to actually get their refunds.
Yeah, I can hear to those remarks, Adam. It can be frustrating for all of us to have to chase that up, and just be aware of what has happened over the past 12 months in terms of if you've earned interest, if you've got a private health fund, have you received any money from Centrelink, have you had one, two or three jobs? Yeah, and that's a key source of frustration as well, where someone's had three jobs and they've got two of the income statements are there, but they're waiting on the third. So we understand that it's easier said than done to say be patient, but if you could take it from Adam and I, that it does yield better results in the long run if you can just hang off till that sort of mid to late July mark. Now, Adam, as we wind up, I guess the point that we'd both like to make is that please make sure you keep your records. That's been well established throughout this podcast. And also be able to show how you've made your claim. So it's one thing to say, I've got a mobile phone bill of $60 a month, but then if you're going to claim $40 a month of that, how did you establish that calculation? And whether you've got a shoebox or whether you've got a separate folder in your emails or whether you've got Dropbox or whether you use the My Deductions tool in the ATO app, it doesn't matter how you keep the records, but in some way, shape or form, you've got to have good records there, Adam, to back things up.
Yeah, 100% agree, Gavin. The key for all of this is keeping those records, and if you keep them as you go, it makes tax time a lot easier for you and a lot easier for your agent.
Well, Adam, as we wind up, thank you very much for this chat. I hope a lot of our listeners, I hope the taxpayers have got a lot out of this, and for the tax agents who may have been listening, and I hope you've also got something out of it. Adam, as challenging as 2020 has been, Australians are very good at turning adversity into triumph. Use this time to gather receipts, gather your records, get advice if necessary. I have a saying about advice, getting it can be expensive, but not getting it can be even more expensive. So don't be afraid to seek a bit of advice, and that advice may be in the form of a, a tax professional, or it may even be in the form of having a good look on the ATO website at some of the wonderful tools that are available directly from the ATO. So use that time wisely to prepare for tax time 2020, and wishing everyone all the best in getting their records together.
Thank you, Gavin, and thanks for the chat today. And I think you've touched on it really well in that summary. 2020 has been a really challenging year, but your tax return doesn't need to be. Starting with advice, and as you say, whether that's your tax professional or even looking at our website for those things, will really make your tax return experience a lot easier, a lot simpler for you.
Great. Thanks very much, Adam. And thank you all for listening to this episode of Tax Invoice. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Subscribe to Tax Invoice so you don't miss out on upcoming podcast episodes on rental deductions and other topics that you may have told us that you want to hear about. Listen or subscribe on your favourite podcast platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or stream and download from ato.gov.au/podcast.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Connect with us on social media and tell us what you think. Download the transcript at ato.gov.au/podcasts.